This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, a chance to talk about venue works and the BCPA, the Coliseum indictments in Bloomington, Mayor Terry Renner's return from a health-related leave of absence, a downtown catalyst project, and a new city manager search. The mayor joins us as well to talk about a theme he highlighted at the council meeting last night, one of acrimony towards public officials, acrimony and more.
I'm talking very specifically here, locally, where we've had physical accosting, physical intimidation of elected officials. We've had frivolous complaints, multiple lawsuits. Those cost time, energy, money.
Reviving civil discourse in and toward municipal government with Mayor Terry Renner of Bloomington. All that and more during Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Mayor Terry Renner of Bloomington is back at being mayor, leading a special session and a regular council meeting after a month-long hiatus. During the special session, aldermen discussed credit card use by elected officials and reviewed a proposal by Venue Works to manage the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. The state police are looking into the use of a city credit card to purchase airline tickets for a trip to Bloomington's Japanese sister city. And Venue Works is currently managing the Coliseum, now known as Grossinger Arena. Five former Coliseum managers have been indicted for fraud and money laundering after Venue Works discovered. The mayors of Bloomington and Normal join us most Tuesdays following Monday evening council meetings. Mayor Renner, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Charlie. Good to be here.
We'll talk about credit cards, the BCPA, and all of that, along with a concept your downtown task force is discussing for the Market Street Garage location and progress on an interim city manager and the search for the city's next city manager. It's a long to-do list, and the list issues need attention. Are you ready to dive back in?
Absolutely, and you're absolutely correct, and that is there are so many things on our plate now, and the natural things, for example, like downtown revitalization, are taking on a new hue, as well as Eastland Mall economic development, as well as sewers and capital improvement plans, and now, of course, an interim and regular city manager, and all of the other revelations that have come out. So this is a very busy time to be a mayor of Bloomington, or a city council member for that matter.
We have not talked to you since your leave of absence. Why did you take it?
Oh, well, as I had mentioned, in consultation with my family and family physician, I decided to take a few weeks off on leave as mayor. You're never not mayor. Of course, I'm always on in conversation with the city manager and council members on telephone, but I wasn't in City Hall as much for several weeks.
Was there ever any question you'd return?
No.
What was the health issue that prompted this?
I'm not going to talk about that in any detail.
Why do you think you don't owe the citizens of Bloomington, whom you represent, a full accounting for the medical leave up front or even afterwards?
I don't know that I don't owe. I think that this is it's a private matter. If it does not affect my performance as mayor of Bloomington, I have yet to be asked by someone on the street. Usually people have said to me, hey, I'm glad you're back. Good to see you. Or, hey, I hope, how are things going? And I'll say, hey, I'm doing fine. So I think that that's absolutely sufficient. I'm here, I'm ready, and we've got a lot of challenges ahead.
Was whatever it is affecting your performance?
No.
Can you reassure Bloomington residents you are back for good?
Yes.
Are you under treatment now for stress or anything else that may bear on your
duties? I'm not going to go talking about details about my medical condition.
There have been lots of rumors flying around about the reason you took leave.
I'm sure there are, and I've heard probably 100 of them, Charlie.
Some of them, of course, are unflattering. We won't detail those mutterings. But
are there any that are flattering?
Usually not when the word rumor is attached. And rumor is a wayward and hardy child, difficult to stamp out. Did you do yourself a disservice in allowing rumors to sprout by not being more open about this?
I think that no matter what I would say, rumors would come out. Rumors, especially in the era of social media, and that we've got a couple of people who don't even live in our community who are spreading all kinds of falsehoods. It wouldn't really matter. I could be the angel Gabriel, and I would have all kinds of rumors out there.
You have a trumpet, you know. Okay. So what's the issue, the job of mayor or how you approach it in terms of stress?
I don't think it's either of those. I think we've got a very different culture today, whether or not it is, as I mentioned last night, the White House, a state house, or Capitol courthouses. We are finding an incredible dissensus, lack of consensus of people, and increasing nastiness and viciousness in our politics. And I think that that's really very, very unfortunate. And it can go through physical accosting of people in public officials, and we've seen it here locally. It can be frivolous complaints, frivolous lawsuits. And that's what's really unfortunate. We've had a culture change. Former Mayor Jesse Smart, for example, when he came to the challenges to the petitions of myself and several other candidates that some people did not like, really, they were frivolous challenges back in December, the first meeting he came to, he said, "My God, in my 20 years in City Hall, I have never seen such viciousness and nastiness." And I said, "Jesse, welcome to our world."
Yeah. You said, as part of your comments last night, an increasing trend toward acrimony in public discussion. You also mentioned the Jesse Smart quote that you just repeated.
That's correct.
And you said this more than just words, and you just said that again. You said we had physical accosting, physical intimidation of elected officials. What incidents are you referring to?
Well, there have been several, but the one that I experienced was actually the person who's filed the so-called complaint about my about the Japanese sister city trip. Came up to my face and clearly was trying to provoke some physical altercation multiple times. I had to have a campaign worker, I didn't have them. They saw this and they tried to get in between us just to give myself some personal space in order to get out of the room. And that's just one of many kinds of situations.
So how widespread is this? Half a dozen? A dozen?
I don't think it's even a dozen people. I think we're talking about maybe a handful of people. And as I say, several of them who don't even live in Bloomington Normal. And I think that's one of the problems is that, frankly, they have way too much influence, with elected officials. And frankly, the entire local media spends way too much time dealing with rumors and innuendo and non-truths, and if the essence, perhaps, of fake news. And we deal with that every day.
Under the Illinois Criminal Code, public status as an elected or public official automatically increases the level of severity of a simple battery to an aggravated battery, a felony. Contact of an insulting or provoking nature or placing a person in fear of same is battery. So it could be aggravated battery. Why are you not reporting these things?
Well, this was one particular event. I left an event by a different radio station, and I was frankly glad to get out of the event. And during an election campaign, probably the last thing you want to do is file a lawsuit. Filing lawsuits and doing really, really crazy things that I would say are over the top are the stuff of what I abhor, not the things that I really want to get down into the weeds in.
Assuming that this is attached to your part of your reason for taking a leave of absence, how will you prevent this atmosphere from taking over again and creating a need for a new leave of absence?
I'm not drawing the causal conclusion that you're drawing, but one of the things that I did say last night is I thanked the members of the council. When I gave my own mayoral standing ovation to say, "Hey, you all, whether we agree or disagree, and we're going to disagree because we're human, you have had the courage to get elected, to put your necks out there, to make tough decisions, to allocate our $215 million a year budget, to provide critical services, not just to the 80,000 people in Bloomington, but to the hundreds of thousands who come here every year. You're not just throwing proverbial bombs from the sidelines. You're actually helping to get the job done." So that was my first attempt to say, "Hey, thank you. I know we all get trashed constantly, and it's more than just verbal abuse. It's much more intense than that." But that's the phenomena that we're seeing locally. And the concern that I have perhaps going forward is that it will discourage really good people from getting involved in public office if they'd say, wow, do I want to subject my family? Do I want to subject myself to this kind of behavior? And I think that's an important thing. I would also, it's not just the elected officials, some of us, myself included, have allowed myself to overreact when you get trashed for years and years and years and years and years. I would also criticize the local media for not really digging into this and reporting on some of this stuff, or at least providing background information when somebody is filing a report that is totally silly or frivolous. Like, for example, the petition drive. That should have been a slam dunk, kind of like, as I may have mentioned before, you know, the birther situation. Nationally, whether it was NPR or others, they went to the two Honolulu newspapers back in August of 1961, and they said, no, they reported this guy Barack Hussein Obama was born here. So that was part of the backdrop of any of the birther coverage, and that is, these are people who are going over the top.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker talking with Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner. Let's turn to the Coliseum indictments. And right up front, I expect you might decline to answer some of these questions because of the ongoing prosecution. But certainly some matters of past history are useful for the public to have a refresher on. I urge you to go as far as you can. What's your reaction to this investigation and its outcome?
Okay. Yeah, and just to, if I can up front, to say we have been urged by our legal counsel in order, frankly, not to hurt our case. This has nothing to do with helping Siam. I think my public comments about Siam in the past have been pretty clear. I have made it clear in the past that trying to deal with Siam was like trying to deal with a Soviet gulag. But moving forward, we are urged to be cautious in how we describe this particular situation because we want to maximize our chances of prevailing in this. It is, first of all, to answer your question directly, not at all surprising to me. Given my 4.5 years as mayor and 3.5 years of them, we had to deal with Siam. Actually, three years of my being mayor, I had to deal with Siam. There was information we couldn't get. They claimed it was private. That is absolutely absurd. We couldn't get information that many members of the public wanted about the books, about the concessions, about many things that should have been released.
Why not sue them?
Well, there are also costs in litigation. And we were also, we did kind of go back and forth to see how serious we thought these things might be. Once it was clear from our internal external auditing and our own internal investigation, we are the ones who asked the state police to investigate this situation. And not some blogger, not anybody else. It's the city of Bloomington that about 1.5 years ago said, enough is enough. We also terminated, you know, any sort of discussion with continuing our agreement. They weren't willing to live up to our terms. We parted ways, and we asked the state police to investigate. And so that's it. That contract should never have been written the way it was. It should have never been for 10 years, all of those things. But I've probably said more than our attorneys would like me to say on that subject at this point.
Were you interviewed as part of the investigation?
No.
Why not, do you think?
I have absolutely no idea what goes in the minds of prosecutors. It doesn't mean that it's over, but it, so far I have not been interviewed, no.
Oh, do you think it has concluded or not?
As we go forward, there's going to be a trial.
Is the $1 million all that investigators think they can prove is missing, or is that all of the missing money?
That I do not know.
Are there potential other suspects out there?
I don't think so. That I don't know.
What effect do you think the revelations regarding the Coliseum will have on the city trying to move forward on any other projects that involve a city investment?
It's certainly not going to be helpful. Now, one of the things that we have done from the very beginning, since I've been mayor at least, is to try to make everything as transparent as we possibly can. There are some things that we do have to hold a little closer to our chest, but by and large, trying to let people know what's going on. And that's why I have an open house. That's why we now have an A-plus in transparency by the Illinois Policy Institute. We're trying to let people know this is your government. Come on inside. Take a look. If you've got questions, we'll try to give you answers. So we're trying as much as possible to restore trust in our city government. It makes it difficult when you have this. Now, this is, of course, what I would call a legacy cost. There's no point in trying to, from my perspective, go and point blame and who should have done what in the past. The thing that I do know now is I'm mayor. I need to do what I can to try to make the Coliseum as profitable or less unprofitable as possible, to make it the best asset that it possibly can be as we move forward in this community. And that's what I'm going to do.
No. Why should the past be given a pass here? Why, if it was a bad contract, why should the people who drafted the contract or approved the contract not be held up?
They are. It's a separate process, though, Charlie. That's what's going on. It's the legal process. And they will be held accountable. I have said many times that I thought this...
But the council members who voted for it, or the mayor who signed off on it, or the then city manager, or the following city manager who... arguably may not have been aggressive enough in pursuing the data.
Those are things that the legal process will have to take care of. If I sat around all day long and looked at the bad decisions of the past, I wouldn't be able to fix the problems that we face moving forward. And so I have certainly had no hesitation suggesting that this was a bad agreement. I probably would have lot of money if I had a nickel for every time I've said this is a bad
agreement.
You've
been very clear on that, yes.
Yes, and it's not just, this is not the only one. So at this point, moving forward with VenueWorks, how can we make this, the BCPA, other things, more cost effective for our citizens and yet continue to provide services, make sure that they are still an asset economically, socially, to our community. Those are my goals moving forward. I can't keep my head looking backward.
Then Alderman Judy Stearns and some outside critics did raise questions. Were they heated? Were they not heated? You've indicated that you knew it was a bad contract, but we're limited. Was there a way to bring their concerns more into the fore?
I think any of the concerns that anybody, I mean, certainly Judy Stearns had no, when the time when she was on the council, had no problem speaking up about the issues that she had. And some of them actually were legitimate issues. Some of them were over the top, and some of them were grandstanding. There was certainly no opportunity left behind to grandstand over anything having to do with the Coliseum. And if you grandstand on everything, sooner or later, you're going to come up with something that has some legitimacy.
Okay, so that's the stopped clock argument. It's right twice a day.
I see what you're saying.
Is this the psychology of the outlier, though, the boy who cried wolf, that if you have a loyal opposition that is questioning virtually everything, when they have legitimate concerns, they are not
then
heard.
People might not. Right.
Is
now,
that
the,
what
now,
happened?
Let's just be clear. There is certainly a good, there's a role for an active people who are watchdogs, and it's very important. We've got lots of systems in place, which is one of the reasons why I encourage people to come to our city council meetings as well as the mayor's open house. So you can see the internal checks that we do have within the city of Bloomington and external checks. So it's good to have watchdogs. When some people use it to try to further their own political cause or to maybe increase their own name recognition or ego, that's a whole different story. Or when they get nasty or when they become irresponsible, that's where we have issues.
What were you told about the contract provisions with SIAM when you were attempting to gain data and transparency?
From the very beginning, we were told, and I was told that, I have to stay at 500 feet on this because I can't tell you all the details because this was an executive session. This will all come out, by the way. I mean, ultimately, this is all going to come out. But that the contract that we have with or had with SIAM had some controversial position or provisions within it, that there were some places that could be interpreted differently. SIAM was digging in their heels, and that's putting it charitably. That they did not have to give us information, that it was their right to privacy. And some things we could not ask for, some things we could ask for, but we'd probably have to go to court. What would the cost of that be? Those were the kinds of questions that we asked. We certainly knew that if we ever signed any agreement with them moving forward, and I think it was pretty clear that we were not going to be able to come to terms, that they needed to open their books in ways that they had not opened their books in the past. And when I and the entire council insisted on that, that's when they walked away from the table and they said, we don't want to extend this contract, back in April of 2016. And that's when we had our contract awarded to VenueWorks, which at least in that sense has been much better to deal with.
Is there anything that needs to happen to enhance the chance that future audits would pick up something like this alleged pattern of chicanery?
Well, again, I'm not an auditor, but there have been many who have said it's this kind of thing might be very, very difficult to find out within just the kinds of audits that had been routinely performed in the past. What we really needed to see was much more of the details, particularly of things like concessions and expenditures, stuff that that SIAM often claimed was private, that was their private information, proprietary information. We do not have that kind of agreement with VenueWorks or any other group. The other thing is that you should never have had an agreement for 10 years. That also is kind of like a death sentence. Maybe 2-3 years and you can terminate for cause, which are the kinds of agreements that we're signing now and including VenueWorks.
Then Alderman Mike Matika says now that then City Manager Tom Hamilton assured the council at the time the original contract passed that there would be transparency. And then Matika says 3 months later, he was told the concessions data were proprietary. Doesn't that inconsistency make Tom Hamilton culpable at some level for allowing the opening to non-report?
Again, my opinion would be absolutely. I am not an attorney. I don't know, all the nuances and ins and outs, but this is part of legacy costs of the past. I wish the previous city manager and other elected officials in the past had behaved differently. We would have fewer problems and issues today if they had. And this could be everything from growth and sprawl issues to the Coliseum. There are lots of issues that, and frankly, messes that I and the council and others now need to clean up as we're trying to make progress moving forward.
Like what?
All the things that I've just mentioned at 500 feet, I've mentioned to you.
Yeah, I'm looking for maybe 250.
we've talked many times about specific subdivisions and whatever, and that I think were really bad decisions of the past.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker talking with Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner. Our next topic after the mayor's leave of absence for health reasons is the proposal to have VenueWorks manage the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts as well as Grossinger Motors Arena. Are you happy with VenueWorks' performance at the arena?
Well, it depends on how you define happy. I'm about half happy and about half not happy. I do, generally speaking, like their openness and transparency. But then, again, given that the group SIAM that we've been dealing with, you could only go up in terms of being happier about the information that you receive. There were some times where last fall, there were some delays in getting us information. That's not acceptable. So as we move forward, as long as VenueWorks within 24, 48, 72 hours gives us information that we never got, not even in many cases months or years later from SIAM, that part's a good sign. The biggest criticism I have right now of VenueWorks, and I think they acknowledge it and they're working on it, is that we still have unacceptably long lines to get concessions when we have events that are highly booked. And my point is, if somebody wants to stand in line and pay way too much for beer and popcorn, boy, you should have somebody there ready to take their money.
Well, if you're only half happy with them, why are they even being considered for BCPA management?
Well, that's a good question. They do have some background in operating both. They are working to improve their management of the current Coliseum. And the decision on this is a decision that the council and I jointly will make. I would have a possible veto over this, which means it would have to pass with a supermajority. I am, at this point, I want to hear the evidence before I make a decision. as to what my position would be on whether or not they should manage the BCPA. I want to know, are we really going to save a couple hundred thousand dollars a year? What are our possibility for quality control? What's the situation with Creativity Center? And so these are some unanswered questions from my perspective. Last night's was a first of many conversations that we will have about this issue.
So what other metrics are you going to pay attention to in measuring their performance and their ability to do
I want to see what other improvements we're seeing in their operations at the Coliseum as well. And I will also call the, as I did when we hired them, I called Nan Whaley, the mayor of Dayton. I called John Reichert, the mayor of Racine, Wisconsin. And gosh, I can't remember. The mayor of Des Moines, Iowa. Can't remember his name offhand. I'm having a senior moment, I guess. So I called mayors who have used VenueWorks in the past before we moved ahead with that contract. And by and large, they had very good to glowing reviews. So we would want to take a look at some of the other cities that have used VenueWorks, Burlington, Iowa, for example, to manage the type of facility we're talking about.
An here. Arts venue, yeah.
Yes.
Are you going to look for other arts venue managers?
Well, I think some of it depends on what we find out from this first wave of conversations. And I would say that's at least very possible.
Should the city negotiate a short-term trial basis contract with whoever it turns out to be?
I think that should be something on the table, Charlie. Absolutely.
So a 1 or 2 year, or
I think,
what's fair?
I don't know what would be fair. I'd have to take a closer look at it and to figure out what are some of the standard operating procedures for contracts in the field. But I would absolutely be open to a shorter-term contract to see how well are you going to do. How well are you doing for us? Are we really saving the kind of money that you told us we were going to save? And are there any programmatic problems? We've been assured that there would be no glitches in programmatic performances. So let's see if that happens. So as far as I'm concerned, this is a proposal. I could see how it might work. I could see how it might not work. And I need more information before I personally can make a decision on this.
Alderman Mboka Mwulambwe indicated he's on the fence on the proposal because of concern the acts brought to the BCPA under VenueWorks might not be as accessible for all economic classes as past management has done. How can a potential contract be written to allay that concern?
You can write a contract to do just about anything. You can insist that the board of directors eat cornflakes at 7:07 every morning. You can write anything you want into a contract and make sure that it's clear and it's enforceable. And those are the kinds of things we will do in the future. And in order to assuage Alderman Mwulambwe's concerns, and I share some of those concerns, we want to be sure that the BCPA is not just a venue for the well-to-do in our community.
What are the performance goals for that venue?
Well, that's part of what the Bloomington Cultural District Commission, which is going to meet day after tomorrow, will help us determine. They're going to evaluate this proposal for the first time. I'd like to see what they have to say. And I've talked to some of the Cultural District Commission members individually, but it will be interesting to see what their collective response is after Thursday's meeting on this very issue.
Interim BCPA manager Carl St. Clair of VenueWorks has said that his focus was the future of the Creativity Center. What is he recommending now on that?
Well, they're basically trying to stay, the Creativity Center is kind of in limbo, and that's unfortunate. They have been able to raise money on their own, about $1 million in private money. I kind of make the analogy between them perhaps and the Zoological Society. I believe we need to have the Creativity Center. I very strongly support the Creativity Center as long as they can raise a substantial chunk of private money as well to fix up the building, which is our building. And frankly, if they don't raise it, we're going to have to fix it somehow, or we'll have to pay to tear it down, right? The other thing, though, is if you think about Route 66 in the corridor from downtown, we currently have the BCPA right on the very northeast edge of downtown. Then we now have the Creativity Center, and we own the property immediately to the north of that, as does Ohlone Wesleyan on the Electrolux site. So I would like to see what kind of synergies we can have between the BCPA, the Creativity Center, and the Electrolux site. And that is something that we need to be moving on quickly. The Electrolux site, we were supposed to have out a request for proposals back in early spring. I've yet to see that. That's probably now going to be pushed off at least a little bit because of the selection of a new interim and new city manager.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker talking with Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner. Let's turn now to the need for that new city manager with the coming departure of David Hales for a new job in Joliet. Mr. Hales was hired at a time the council said it needed a fiscal manager above all else, at a time when there was a need to downsize the workforce, cut the budget, change a number of previous systems. What do you think Bloomington needs now? City manager.
This is me speaking as mayor. I think it's really critical for us to have someone with a skill set that really understands economic development and how to invest in the future to grow the local economy, to leverage the assets of downtown, of our older communities, and of Eastland Mall, talk about another underperforming area, someone with an economic development background who's on the cutting edge of economic development moving forward.
Really?
And
I mean,
someone who, frankly, can help us to try to improve morale in City Hall, because I think that's another issue with many of our employees.
The state has just siphoned off more revenue in its new budget. Property value is flat, sales tax revenue flat. The pension issue remains a big one for cities across the state. Is the fiscal situation really all that much different than when Mr. Hales came on board?
We're not in great shape, but no, we were in meltdown status. And we went from 750 full-time equivalent employees to 650 full-time employees. We did not at that time even really have a reserve. It looked like we couldn't even make payroll. We have a $15+ million reserve today. Yes, we're in much better shape than we were at that time. That doesn't mean that we don't have fiscal challenges, but we are in much better shape today than we were when Mr. Hales took over.
The skill set that you identified as desirable is a policy skill set. It's not just an administrative skill set. Is a city manager the hands of the council, or is there room, perhaps risky room, for a city manager to be that innovator in suggesting policy to the council?
Well, I think the city manager can suggest policy to the council, but the brains of the operation are supposed to be the mayor and the city council, the elected officials. City manager is supposed to be the fingers that make things happen. And sometimes those fingers are really, really gifted, like a surgeon. Sometimes those fingers may not be good for a surgeon, but might be good for a mechanic. So fingers and their dexterity will differ from one city manager to another. And so I'm looking for somebody whose dexterity is toward economic development. And when we ask for something to happen, it happens. And especially in economic development, we know if we wait or we dither or we study our navel while we're trying to make a decision, we are going to lose opportunities to grow our local economy and to make Bloomington a better place to live, work, and play.
Since you were away, the Downtown Task Force issued its interim report and is calling for a conversation about a catalyst project involving a new Bloomington library, coupled with a Connect Transit transfer center and a parking facility on the current location of the aging and deteriorating Market Street parking garage. As a matter of disclosure, GLT Program Director Mike McCurdy is head of the Connect Transit Board. Clean question of first impression for you since you are just back. What do you think of this idea?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I don't think any idea that's that potentially game-changing and exciting should be dismissed. I think we need, and some council members thought it perhaps should be dismissed out of hand because of an informal poll at a committee of the whole meeting. The charge of this commission, this mayoral downtown revitalization commission, was broad. And its charge involved implementing the downtown plan, which is broad, and the comp plan that 8,000 people were involved in our community. That was its primary charge, not whether or not you had an informal poll of people at a committee of the whole meeting. So I strongly support pursuing this as an option. Is it possible? I don't know. But it does seem to be something that is exciting enough that we ought to take a closer look at it before we say, eh, no, not interested. Maybe we move on to something else.
What needs to happen to vet the idea?
Well, in the short run, we need to find out what it is that Connect Transit is willing to put in terms of skin in the game. What would our cost be? Could we really have a parking garage at that site constructed physically that would also accommodate a library? Where there is diagonally from there an empty parking lot? There are a lot of reasons to see why this might work. My initial reticence to this, and in that informal poll, I voted to I said I preferred the library to stay where it was. So I was one of those in that situation. Alderwoman Amelia Burgess has convinced me that this proposal has merit. I don't know if I'm 100% there, but this proposal definitely has merit. And one of my concerns about the library is, okay, if we don't have the library where it is now, what's going to happen to that area? Well, at the end of the day, we own all of it. So we're not going to have that area, you know, deteriorate. We're going to be able to control the use of that area that currently is a city dump, and we'll relocate public works. We'll take care of a lot of things there. It might even be someday more city administration. It might be light retail. There could be any number of things that we do with that current library site. So I'm definitely willing to have that conversation. I think it would not be a good service to our citizens if we didn't even consider this particular anchor project, because it's very possible that we can actually afford this one. And that's what's important. And when you have an anchor project, the thing about it, whatever it is, and we have a couple small anchors. The Route 66 Visitor Center is a small anchor. That one big project or a small project produces more in private investment. Capital attracts capital, and that's what we're trying to do in downtown and our community generally.
Yeah, the BCPA was supposed to be a catalyst. The Coliseum was supposed to be a catalyst. You mentioned a couple of other smaller projects. When will we get to the point after public investment in these catalysts of really attracting a large-scale private
investment? Well, let's also be clear. The two things that you're talking about were before we had a downtown revitalization plan. And that is the BCPA and the Coliseum, in a sense, are kind of like islands separated from each other, not part of a comprehensive plan. We have a plan for downtown, and we do have a comprehensive plan for our entire community that I mentioned over 8,000 people were involved in. We are not flying blind. We're not doing things piecemeal. We are doing things very clearly, very deliberatively, very strategically in order to revitalize downtown Bloomington. Now, it's not the same kind of process as revitalizing Uptown Normal. Right. It was a much smaller area there for all kinds of reasons. It's a very, very different type of challenge. But we do have one of the advantages, and that is we've got some really great old historic buildings. So our core bones are really, really good. And I think this is an exciting time to be in Bloomington, in spite of the many challenges and problems that we've had that you've mentioned.
Mayor Terry Renner is the mayor of Bloomington. He joins GLT's Sound Ideas After Council meetings. Thanks for your extended time today. I still have two pages of questions.
Maybe we could do that next time, Charlie.
Welcome back again. I'm
Charlie Schlenker. Take care. Bye-bye.
Support for GLT's Sound Ideas comes from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd, helping investors plan for the future and stay on track for retirement and college savings based on their unique situations and goals. Details at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The Illinois Shakespeare Festival has appointed an old friend to a new role. GLT's Laura Kennedy has more.
John Stark has deep roots at the Illinois Shakespeare Festival. Since 1993, he's designed 32 shows at the festival, beginning with an adaptation of Pericles. From shaping sets, Stark moves to shaping entire seasons at the ISF as its newly appointed artistic director. In his early years in theater, Stark trod the boards as an actor, but soon transitioned full-time to scenic design as well as teaching in the Illinois State University College of Fine Arts. Stark says, as a scenic designer, he's always been invested in every aspect of theater production.
I have a theatrical family. I'm married to an actress-director, Lori Adams, which many people in the community know her and her work. My children are both performers. And so I've been always interested in the whole event of theater and involved with that, and especially the Illinois Shakespeare Festival. I think that it is exciting to be involved with this festival. It's been very important to me. I began in 1993 at the festival, and I've done 18 seasons there. So it's been a large part of my professional life, and I've designed 32 shows. But every time I'm doing a show, I'm looking at the staging, I'm looking at ways to help my fellow collaborators, and all of that helps with the director and the whole production. I think my background in acting and being married to an actress, I think I'm very aware of the actor's need. Theater is the actor's craft, and they're our storytellers. They're the last, they're what brings a story to the audience. And so all of us, in a way, or in support of that activity, of the actor giving the story through the beautiful words of Shakespeare.
Well, coming to the festival in this new role, will you be drawing on the past work at the festival to guide you, or do you see yourself starting afresh?
I certainly am going to draw on a lot of the colleagues I've had over the years. I've worked with every artistic director except the founder, Cal Prittner. And so I have a lot of wonderful examples of different ways to do the work, but it will have to come from my own way of bringing it to the festival. So I'm certainly going to be drawing on different ways that they programmed productions, looking at the good ideas that they had. People like John Sipes, Cal McLean, Debbie Alley, Kevin Rich, all these artistic directors have brought different things to the festival that we will continue. There are also people I've worked with in the past that I plan to bring back, as well as bringing in new people. We're always bringing in new people to the festival from across the country.
Well, Kevin Rich was your immediate predecessor.
Yes.
He came from the Milwaukee theater scene, and a lot of the actors and some of the directors he brought from Milwaukee. And then we also had Cal McLean, who was artistic director for a while. He had deep roots in the Chicago theater scene, so he brought a lot of Chicago artists in. Do you see yourself as drawing from a particular talent pool with regards to the festival?
I think that most of my experience would be more in Chicago, but I also have pretty deep roots in St. Louis as well. And I've done a little bit of work in Indiana. So I think that I have sort of a regional sort of bent, but probably heavily relying on the Chicago area and my experiences there. I've also recently traveled the country to other Shakespeare festivals and talked to and also auditioned actors from those festivals, and very excited about meeting them and drawing from those festivals.
Well, in recent past, there have been more new plays that have been going on at the Shakespeare Festival. First of all, do you intend to continue that trend? And have you also thought of perhaps commissioning works for the Illinois Shakespeare Festival?
I do. I'm very attracted to new plays, and that's exciting. I was involved with the first time the Q Brothers came with Q Gents. It was a very exciting work, and this last summer we just produced
Romeo,
I Heart Juliet.
I Heart Juliet. That sold out before it even started.
Right. Though that was probably some of our most recent commissioned work. Probably in the next couple seasons, we'll be looking at commissioning work and for our TYA show and some of those productions.
We will TYA look, is
Theater for Young Audiences, which we do as a free production during the week and on Saturday morning. That's probably where we'll use that sort of idea for next season, at least. But I am interested in new work. I want to find ways to bring new work in, as long as we can also make it financially viable for us to, you know, attract an audience to the festival. Because number one, I need to support the actors and the performers and the whole company in producing good work. But we also have to take a look at the finances and make sure people are coming and make that all work out, too.
Well, you just mentioned the Theater for Young Audiences. Do you intend to expand festival outreach? Do you have any new ideas there?
The thing we're talking about mostly is taking it. We've been performing primarily in the Bloomington Normal area. We want to also expand out to the other regional cities of Champaign-Urbana, Decatur, Peoria, and Springfield. We see that all as that whole central Illinois as a big opportunity, an opportunity. We feel that Bloomington Normal, of course, is our base. They're our heart. They're our heart and soul of our audience is right here in this community. But we want to draw further out to those other areas. And part of that will be looking looking at ways to take the TYA show into those communities and attracting, making people aware that we are here. We feel that we're the number one professional theater company in Central Illinois, where we have an equity company of professional actors, and that we're on the map. And so we want to make sure that all those communities know about us as well. And TY is one of those ways to do that.
See, that's the interesting thing about the Illinois Shakespeare Festival is it's not just about art. It's not just about theater, but it's about tourism as well.
Sure.
It's that bringing people into Bloomington Normal, mm-hmm. and getting them interested in what is going on in that theater that you had a hand in designing out there at Ewing.
I did. I was the liaison between the College of Fine Arts and the Illinois Shakespeare Festival with the contractors. And so I was on site just about every day when that was being built. And so I had a hand in planning it and also then seeing it through the end construction phase, which was an amazing process because it got all done from one season to the next. We did not lose a season. And that's kudos to the contractors. And they're highly motivated, and this community stood behind it.
I loved how when they were just digging, you know, and just getting the base ready, it was like I would drive by and it would look like an ancient Greek theater that was being excavated. I really liked that.
It was. And they dug down there and found the tennis courts that it was originally built on. And that's where it was first built, was on the tennis courts of the Ewing Manor. And so that asphalt blacktop was still there. But we dug through that and put in this new facility that is a little more friendly to the actors backstage than it used to be.
It has. It's positively luxurious compared to the way it used to be back there. What does that feel like to you? You're the man who helped build that theater, and now you're at the helm as the captain, so to speak. What does that mean to you, John?
Well, first of all, I'm very proud and I'm very honored to be in this position and to have the trust of Dean Gene Miller and Janet Wilson, the producer of Illinois Shakespeare Festival, who is also in the School of Theater and Dance. And to gain that trust means a lot to me. But I also know a lot about that building, and I have a few ideas about some physical changes and upgrades that can help us in small ways. There's also a certain amount of maintenance we need to do because it has been 17 years since that was built, which is surprising, right? Seems like yesterday, but it has been 17 years. So there's a little bit of upgrading to do, just having to do with weather and mm-hmm. all those sorts of things. But there's a few things I want to do in that way to upgrade and shape the space slightly differently than it has been. And I think I know a lot about how that can be done because I've seen it from the construction phase to working there as a scenic designer for all these 32 shows that I've designed there. And then any season I was not designing, I was attending and watching.
That's John Stark, the new director of the Illinois Shakespeare Festival. John Stark's wife, Lori Adams, has appeared in the festival along with their daughter, Anna, and son, Nathan. They cut their acting chops as youngsters there. One of the many plays designed by Stark at the festival is Shakespeare's Twelfth Night. Here's Mary Catterley singing a setting from the text. The song is called When That I Was.
Knaves and thieves, men shut their gates for the rain, it raining every day. But when I came on last to wive by swaggering.
Support for GLT comes from Jack Baytall Real Estate Group at Keller Williams. Jack and his team are committed to helping Bloomington Normal continue to thrive by giving back to GLT and other local nonprofits. Current listings at jacksguarantee.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
I'm Mary Applington. Like you, I'm part of many organizations. My GLT contribution also makes me part of a community who believes in substance over sound bites. I can't imagine silence at 89.1. I thrive on All Things Considered and other news programs. I appreciate expanded local coverage, informing me about community issues. Join the GLT community and renew your financial commitment or make a first-time contribution. Click on donate at WGLT.org.
If you've never contributed before, you need to understand the best way to ensure you can continue to rely on Sound Ideas is to help pay for it. Period. Everything GLT brings to you is entirely dependent on your willingness to pay your fair share. There's never been a better time to make your first contribution to GLT. Please do it now. You'll be glad you did. Click on WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The uncertainty surrounding the DACA program is placing stress on some young immigrants. That's a concern among mental health professionals. President Trump's administration announced the termination of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, which gives undocumented youth who entered the country as children temporary protection against deportation. IPR's Maureen McKinney has more.
That's the sound of a September protest over the possible end of the DACA program. It was recorded by the Chicago Patch. The president has since softened his stance, but DACA recipients like Luis Gomez are still worried.
Negotiations have me very anxious in a way that I haven't felt in years.
Gomez, of Elgin, entered the country a little over a decade ago when he was 11.
Talking with other undocumented folks, it also has them anxious. I've heard a lot of people have, receded and have gone into episodes of depression.
Psychologists who work with DACA recipients say all the uncertainty harms the mental health of those immigrants, 42,000 of them who live in Illinois. And a recently published Stanford University study found that children's mental health improves when their mothers are eligible for DACA.
Being of undocumented status is really a huge source of anxiety, that you could be discovered and forcibly separated from your family through deportation is clearly traumatic and threatening, especially due to many immigrant populations' emphasis on the centrality of family.
That's Rebecca Ford Pass, a psychologist at the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago.
That's Maureen McKinney of IPR reporting on the stress related to DACA recipients from the president's decision to end Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Thanks for listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Thanks to Laura Kennedy and Mayor Terry Renner for appearing on the show. This is WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. This is GLT, Bloomington Normal's public media.